Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
What's up, hustlers? Welcome back. This is Andrew Morgan, your host for today's episode of Startup Hustle, covering all things e-commerce, Amazon, entrepreneurship. I'm super excited about today's guest. I say that every week, but that's because I actually am. I get some amazing guests on this show, and I'm just privileged to get the chance to pick their brains for 45 minutes and share some of that with you. So, founder of Marknology here with you today. We're going to get into some awesome stuff. Before we do, today's episode of Startup Hustle is sponsored by Gusto. Gusto has modern solutions for modern HR problems. Whether it's talent management, payroll, or onboarding tools, Gusto's HR platform has it all for you. Be smarter than your competitors. Try a 3-month free subscription now. Just sign up at gusto.com/startup hustle to get started. That's gusto.com/startup hustle. Super thankful for our sponsors. They're what fund us being able to promote this show and get it out to more viewers. And I personally am a user of Gusto, so I love when our sponsors are also something that I'm using in my day-to-day. But today's episode is called Selling Your E-Commerce Business. And a lot of our listeners know that right now it's a super hot time with aggregators. Of course, a lot of business builders are in it from the beginning to exit. That's part of their plan. And even if it's not part of your plan, it should be at some point. So a lot of stuff around this that I think will be a lot of fun. Today's guest has sold his own business, now runs a consulting agency, I won't go into all of that, has his own podcast, several brands he's working with. So he has a lot of expertise around this space, coming all the way from England. Matt Edmondson, welcome to the show.
Wow. Thank you for that intro. It's great to be here. All the way from England too. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think we're going to have a lot of fun because we've already had an hour together or so where we've got I've got to chat it up on your own podcast.
That's right.
OrionDigital.com/e-commerce-podcast. I'm going to have that in the notes for anyone that's listening in the car if they want to
get some more. I'll just go to e-commercepodcast.net. That's
okay, e-commercepodcast.net. Thank you. I didn't have those notes, so appreciate it. But no, we had a lot of fun talking there. And you know, we even talked some business afterwards, I think. So, you know, it's going to be a great connection. We were connected by someone great already.
Yeah.
So, I feel very close. So I'm just going to keep it real today with the questions.
Awesome.
As like my listeners know, I love getting into the founder's story. I think that that's something that kind of connects whoever's on the show, whether they're guests, the hero story, and lets listeners and myself, because this is honestly for me. I'm trying to get value and by proxy, everyone else does. So, you know, I know you started a business, you know, I think I have notes here from 2004. Was that your first attempt into entrepreneurship? When did you know you were going to be an entrepreneur or a founder?
I think I knew when I was a kid. You know, I remember when I was at school, I often say I started out life as a drug dealer, because when I was at school, we were we had this sort of these changing rooms where all the boys got changed and the girls got changed in the other one. And so you'd call it high school. We just called it senior school. And so I would have been probably what, 13 at the time or something like that. And
you, so our high school is 16, 17, 18.
Oh, okay. In which case I've no idea what it is, but it's, I was about sort of 12, 13 years old. And I was, you kind of have to picture the scene, right? I have ginger hair. I have, like yourself, right? I have national health glasses. Now, if you're of a certain age and you're English, you'll know what that means. Basically, it means I had these government-supplied glasses, which were really ugly, okay? Mm. So I had these sort of national health glasses, ginger hair, and I used to get bullied quite a bit. And so one of the things that I did to become, you know, a bit more popular and not get bullied was I sort of tried to find my way in by selling stuff to these guys. They thought they were getting a bargain. I was making a bit of money on the side. And one of the things that I realized quite quickly that I could sell were my asthma pills. So I had asthma when I was younger. And the doctors gave me these tablets that I was supposed to take every day. I didn't need them every day, but I was supposed to take them every day. These tablets, though, when you took them, made you made you pass wind, you know, through your backside. They made you fart. And so so I sold them as fart tablets. And because I didn't pay for this medicine, because we're in England, we have the National Health Service, I got all these this medicine for free. And then I'd sell it to the guys, certainly all the boys in the class, who would buy them and go around farting all afternoon. And they were, you know, stoked about this.
They were loving it.
Yeah, no, it was all markup for me until I got caught by the teachers. But the doctors,
That's fight or flight. That's survival skills at that point.
Yeah. Well, you've got to do something, right? You've got to do something. Yeah. And so that's how it started. And when I left university, I didn't really know what I wanted to do, Andrew, if I'm honest with you. I was young, you know, I'd lived in the States for a while. I'd traveled a little bit, and so I'm kind of like, I'd moved from my hometown to Liverpool, and I'm kind of like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what career to do. I know I want to do something for myself.
Can we pause right there for a second? So, Sure. Okay. So, you know, 13, 14, you're in England, somewhere in there in college. When you say university, what's that? Is that like the next grade, like 17, 18? Yeah.
So, university over here is college for you. What you would call college, we call university. So it's where you do both. Your degree.
Basically. We have university and college. I think the difference is like the size, like if it's a 4-year school or a 2-year school, just so you know. But so you did that in the US and then came back?
No. I did university here. I lived before going to university. I don't know how boring you want me to be, but I took some time out after my A-level. So we finished school when I was 18. We did what we call A-levels. And I then moved to the States for about 18 months, and I worked in a children's home in North Carolina.
That's like what we do here, program. I think. Like, you know, a lot of our students will try to go to Europe for study abroad or something, a year or two, to kind of figure out what they're doing. Okay. Yeah. So I didn't know that even we had the other way. I didn't even know it went the other way. So
cool. No, it did. It was life changing. It was amazing. You know, you see the world is bigger than who you are, really. Mm. Which is a bit of a revelation when you're 18 years old, because the world normally revolves around you when you're 18. And so, when I left uni, I wanted to go into business for myself, but I had an opportunity to go and work for a friend of mine who was an entrepreneur, a man I totally respected and adored. I thought he was fantastic. He was a great dad. He was a great husband, and he was running a successful business, and he had ginger hair. I mean, you know, the list of credentials just kept on growing with this fella. And
Trustworthy, immediately. Exactly. You know, like honestly, like I can relate to that. I'll pause just for a second, because what once was such a big insecurity is now, you know, funny, and it's popular now almost to be a ginger, but very much so. Were you from a lower income family to get, like, at least here, if we're getting government aid, you know, kind of implies certain things. I don't understand with the healthcare in Europe, if that means the same thing, but, you know, to have the government level glasses. And did you come from a business family or
it's a bit of an odd one, really, because my parents divorced when I was a young kid, when I was 9. So this is back in the 80s, where divorce was still quite uncommon back then. Mm-hmm. And so it was a bit unusual growing up in a single parent family. Now, my mum was poor when we were growing up. She worked several jobs, tried to maintain, you know, life. She, probably one of the people I respect most in the world is my mum, yeah. and how she fought for her kids. My dad worked for himself, and then his company was bought out, and so he went to work for them. And so I saw my dad as a, you know, he was kind of an entrepreneur, and then he was bought out by another company and worked for them. So I could see the difference in him, actually. Sometimes it was good, sometimes it was not great for him.
So you had a little bit of insight into like doing your own thing, or the freedom that comes with that, or okay.
Yeah, so I also had insight into growing up without stuff, but at the same time, my dad had stuff. It's just that I rarely saw it. So hence
you saw dad have it, you saw mom have nothing. You're like, okay, there's two worlds here.
Yeah.
So for me, just relating it, you know, grew up missionary family in Africa.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
So, you know, just till I was 16, I moved back from Congo at 16.
Wow. So you were there the whole of your childhood?
Not the entire time. Actually, I just didn't want to bore you either. But I was born in Montreal. By three, I was in Cameroon.
Okay.
Then I lived in Moscow, and then Botswana, and then Congo.
Good. Man, you got around.
I know.
And they let you back into the States when you were 16 after going to all those places too.
Honestly, it was after 9/11. It was December 25th, 2001. And for the next 10 years, I was on a list, and I got like frisked down and, you know, brought to another room almost every time I flew for the next 10 years. So I was on a list.
Wow.
But you can imagine being red haired, like coming back from Africa to a public school. They don't know what to do with you. You know, the kids don't. They're like, the black kids don't know what to do with you, but you feel more comfortable around them than anyone else. And then and the white kids are country or a little racist, some of them, or things like that that I didn't relate to. You know, I'm like, I ain't like that either. I'm cultured. I'm not like, you know, a hillbilly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just getting picked on, small glasses, you know, same thing. And you're making friends with whoever will accept you, keep you out of trouble. Mm-hmm. But I had a dad that had freedom in his life. So we didn't have financial freedom, but geographically and like, you know, doing his own thing in Africa, right? We were pioneers. There was not even organizations there. He started it. He was the first one, you know, for a lot of those places. So seeing that, then seeing him come back here at times, like later in life and work, right? Mm-hmm. For the man or a job looked like it was killing him. In some ways, to have freedom like that. And then, you know, there wasn't working remote and all these things that there are today. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, if you were living overseas and working, or you had to make a living there to stay. So relating to you on that, just like where, 'cause I think everyone has this like an inspirational source where like doing your own thing is like, you know, because there's the amount of entrepreneurs that become not even just successful, the ones that are like become entrepreneurs and support themselves through life. There's very few of us. Number one, there's a whole lot more that accept just like, I'm just going to work the job and that's great for me. And so there's usually somewhere where I think that like first light bulb or that first flame of like, I want to do my own thing, comes from. And for me, like, I always just loved doing a great job. I never saw myself as an entrepreneur. I didn't see missionary work or mission work or that as being business at all. It was just the freedom aspect that I latched onto, you know? So it was, I wanted to be able to, so, you know, I didn't even know the word entrepreneur until I was, I don't know, 24, 25.
Like, yeah,
I
but didn't it wasn't even... fashionable, was it, until a few years ago?
Yeah,
I don't know if it's the same for you, but certainly here in the UK, entrepreneur was seen as something that you would say if you were unemployed or couldn't find a job. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it was ridiculed. It was looked down upon. Only recently has this term been
glorified a little bit.
Yeah.
So for me, I think I just didn't think of business, but I was always hustling. Mm. So, you know, always had three or four hustles going on. Okay. Mm. So we're back. You're working for this guy besides your mom, this guy that really inspired you, you know, like you still respect to this day. Let's talk more about him and what's next.
Yeah. So his name's Simon. And to this day, he and I are still good friends. He, I worked for him for 5 years and he sold the business after that. And he moved from the UK to New Zealand where he still lives. And every year I try and go and see him because New Zealand is a beautiful part of the world that you should definitely see at least once in your life. And, for those 5 years, I kind of went from not knowing anything to watching this guy who was running a small business. And we were importing saunas and steam rooms from Germany. And so I had to learn how to do sales, how to do telesales, how to do health spa design and installation. Do you know what I mean? And we weren't just selling saunas, you know, that you would buy for a couple of quid or, you know, a few thousand bucks. No. We were selling the most expensive sauna I ever sold was £120,000, which is what, about $160,000, somewhere around there, for a, you know, a sort of 7-8 foot square wooden room. It's a lot of money. And so I just loved it. I got into it. I loved the job. I loved what I was doing with, you know, just meeting people and solving problems and understanding that this is how business worked. And
to be honest, like a side thought of that is like anyone you're meeting that's buying a sauna for $100,000 probably has a pretty cool origin story themselves. Not everyone,
I cannot begin to tell you, right? What would happen was these guys would take them to Germany to see the factory, to do the tour, to go around health spas in Germany, because the health spas were so much better in Germany than in the UK. Certainly at the time, we were so far behind the curve, it was ridiculous. And so we would go over to Germany. And so I would get to spend 2-3 days with these people. We're in a health spa, so the mobile phone doesn't work. And if I'm honest with you, German health spas, they don't wear clothes, right? And it's just part of their culture. So you talk about getting to know someone, you know, in a way that no one else has ever got to know them before. And you're sat there, you're talking about their origins, what they like. And I had people telling me stories about, I remember asking one guy, I'm not going to name drop, but I remember asking one guy, what was the worst impulse purchase you ever made? Because my wife was always going on at me for impulse purchases. You know, and I'd impulse purchase maybe, I don't know, a CD or, you know, this was
something
back off in the
Instagram,
day. Something,
or yeah, hoodie yeah. or something. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. yeah. His wife just looked at him and said, oh, you've got to tell him the story now. And so he just sort of put his head down as we sat there in the restaurant that night. And he said, last week I made a really bad impulse purchase. He said, I really like black cars. And I just happened to be near the Ferrari showroom and they had a black Ferrari in there. And he said, so I went in and bought it. Just impulse purchased a Ferrari. And then he said, I drove it back to the house. And he said, I drove it around for a day too. And he said, I just didn't like it. So I drove it back, sold it back to them, lost 30-40 grand or whatever it was, you know, selling this Ferrari back to them. He said, I'm an Aston Martin man. Why did I do that? I don't know. And so it was just different worlds. Do you know what I mean? Same problem, impulse purchase, just different magnitudes on what they could and can't spend. So we had the people and the stories. We have in the UK something called the Times Top 10 Rich List, which every year the Times, which is a newspaper here, details who the top 10 richest people are. And at that point, when I was taking people over to Germany, I knew quite a few of them. I had their cell phones on my cell phone.
That's a good small business, if you ask me.
It was amazing.
Great business to be in.
It was amazing. I would be on their private jets. I mean, I went and stayed in their ski chalets. I got to know some wonderful, wonderful people. Crazy things happen. Like there's a lady who I got to know, interior designer, beautiful lady. We just hit it off straight away. And we met in Courchevel, which is in the Swiss Alps.
Okay, big deal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No big deal. Met in the Alps.
Met in the Alps. I'd gone to the Alps on the client's private jet. I was staying in his ski chalet. He wanted a sauna, a steam room, and a shower in his chalet. And so I went over to spec it out, speak to the builders and stuff, and tell them what they needed to do. And that's where I met this beautiful lady who was his interior designer. Fast forward a few years, she gets married. And we made on that trip while we were together, we hit it off so well. And she said to me, she goes, Matt, listen, if I ever get married, I want you to do the wedding ceremony. And I was like, okay, all right, why not? And so a few years later, she calls me out of the blue. I'm getting married. And she got married in an Austrian castle, which she'd rented. And so my wife and I flew over to Austria and I performed a wedding ceremony in an Austrian castle. And so, I mean, there's just lots of these stories, Andrew. I could wax lyrical all night. So I should probably
I knew when
there.
You said that, like there was a lot there that I was like, that's the stuff that I would love. But for our listeners, we're going to keep it to the title and move along. But because I think people drive, like, for me, the most exciting thing is why I love this podcast. It's why I love the industry, the e-commerce industry. Like, I just love meeting people. You know, people are what make the world go around. And their stories, right? Everyone has one.
Absolutely.
You know, and a lot of times I find that people that are successful by, you know, societal standards, for the most part successful, have like the best stories, because usually they're like, those people are made of a lot of struggle before they get there. And so, you know, it makes for a good story. Getting back to your story. Okay. So you're learning all these things, 5 years with them. You're still doing Simon, I believe.
Yeah. What happened was, just to bridge the gap, Simon sold the business. I tried to buy it, couldn't buy it. Couldn't raise enough cash. He sold it to somebody else. I, in the meantime, built my internet business, went out on my own, started doing websites and all that sort of stuff, which I'd been doing as a side hustle. And then about 5 years after he sold it, the company that we imported the saunas and steam rooms from, Germany, got back in touch with me and said, would I get back involved? So this was when all the crazy things started to happen, and I was on clients' private jets because it was my company all of a sudden. So I was running an internet business and bizarrely a health spa business. And so that was probably, when did I leave the health spa business? I left that 2011. So yeah.
So did you get back into it from the distributor that was making them, or from the company that, or like from the people that bought Simon's business?
So the people that bought Simon's business, they had a license to import from the German manufacturer and to the UK. And after 5 years, the German manufacturer decided to end that relationship for reasons which I probably shouldn't get into. But they decided to end that relationship, and they contacted me and said, listen, would you be interested in getting back involved? And I said, so absolutely, I would. Yeah.
So did you pick up a business that was pre-existing, or you started another one then?
So I started from scratch, but we had an existing customer base.
Okay.
And the health spa industry is quite small. So I had a little bit of a name at that point still. And so we started literally from scratch, but inside of a couple of years, we were all steam.
I can attest that, like, even if I'm spending 10 grand or 20 grand, let's say, like, at least in my life, like, I definitely want to have a relationship with that vendor or that person. And it seems like, you know, you kind of get what you pay for in a lot of worlds, at least the ones I walk in. And I can see why that, like, almost as you get a higher ticket item, those people get even more and more and more. I want to work with, like, who I know, who I trust,
exactly.
You know, and they're like, hey, we want Matt back, kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So I love that. I just want to get into the details. Like, you didn't inherit a business. You basically were starting from scratch with a customer list. They're like, let's get back in the game. And then you had an agency or a consulting business building websites. Were they both taking off? Were you scaling them? Was it just you? What was happening then?
No, there was me and my business partner at the time, and we actually ended up doing two things. We did the web agency, and we kind of merged an accounting idea. So we were doing accounting, and we were doing websites at the same time, which was quite good because a lot of people at the time knew they needed an accountant, but very few people had websites, and so it was kind of an easy upsell. And then one of our website clients, a guy called Andy, I knew him from the health spa days. We ended up doing, you know, I ended up doing saunas and steam rooms from him. In fact, he was a guy that I spent several days with in Germany get to know. He's a really interesting guy, South African guy. And he had a health club in Jersey, and he's like, listen, I really need to do something with this health club now. Have you got any ideas? And I said, well, man, you should set up a website selling stuff online, because at the time, bearing in mind, this is probably 2005. At the time, Jersey, which is a small island off the coast of France, it's kind of between, it's just off France, but it's still kind of English. It's sort of independently British, if you like. It's a strange thing, but it's a tax haven. And so I said, you really need to start selling online, because they had this quirky rule, which meant that they could sell goods to the UK without charging VAT, which is like a sales tax.
Yep.
But our sales tax is 20%. So if you can sell something for 20% without that tax, you're 20% cheaper.
Yep.
But you're still making the same profit margin as someone from the
UK. Just passing it to the customer, and you're beating everybody else on price alone.
And so that's when 2006 we started Jersey Beauty Company and launched Jersey Beauty Company. I remember it really well. We launched it August 2006. And I thought, you know, just from the limited research we'd done, I thought, you know what, if we could just do 10 grand's worth of sales by the end of the year. So by the end of 2006, my plan was to have done £10,000 worth of sales, about $15,000. And I was like, if we could do that, that would be great. And we would be on track. And it would be kind of the upper end of the research that I'd done. Well, by the end of 2006, Jersey had not sold £10,000 worth of product. It had sold £400,000 worth of product. And that's just when we knew we had struck, you know, like a gold mine. Mm. It was just like, you know, that picture, that cartoon of a mosquito that hits someone's blood vessel and it's just exploding. It's like, pull out. And it just felt like that. Like everything was just ballooning.
What were you guys selling?
Beauty products.
Okay.
So yeah, we took some well-known skincare brands like Dermalogica, Gino was another one. I don't know if they're in the States actually. It's a French skincare brand, super popular. And we started with just two skincare brands and we put them online and man alive, did it take off. I mean, it properly went crazy.
Is that how you met Jared?
No, that's not how I met Jared. I was on somebody's podcast and I'm really bad with names and it's going to come back to me. The name of
Okay. I was just thinking of the like similarities between, you know, skincare.
Well, that's what happened. I was on someone's podcast, beautiful lady. She was a skincare therapist and she was interviewing me about her podcast. Beautiful, beautiful lady. And as I was telling my story, she's like, you need to meet Jared because you and him just sound so similar. And then, So she introduced us. And then Jared and I connected and I'm like, dude, you're like me in America. You're like my American brother, you know, just the stories were so similar. And so we met, we've hit it off really well. We talk probably once a month at the moment. He's a super cool guy. Yeah, I really like him.
And you guys are in the same space, like building websites, mm-hmm. You know, have at least like, you know, Skincare by Alana as a beauty brand. I don't know. We didn't get to the end of this one. So, okay, things are ballooning. I want to bring us back. But before we jump into the part two, let's give another shout out to our sponsor, Gusto.
Let's do it. Yeah.
Are you tired of long hours because of payroll? Save more time with Gusto. With its automated processes, you can file taxes and manage payroll in a matter of minutes. What are you waiting for? Register at gusto.com/startup hustle to get a free 3-month subscription now. That's gusto.com/startup hustle. For me, like it's so important to get like so much of my stuff automated. And like that's a priority for me. And as well as being in the cloud, like I want to be in Liverpool and filing like all of my payroll, getting everything done without having to worry about employees pre-writing checks or like having this ready and have my assistant have to drop it in the mail. So you know, gusto.com, great way to save. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have a full-time bookkeeper or I would say like HR person at the time in Marknology. I use like some fractional stuff and Gusto really helps me plug that in. So shout out to Gusto for making this episode possible. All right, back to part two. So you build a website on the island of Jersey, which is news to me. I'm learning something new every day. And from there, you guys are like expecting 15K in sales. Now, listen, if an Amazon client came to me and was like, hey, Drew, like I'm ready to get started. Like, you know, we're just shooting for 1500 a month in sales this year. If we end up the year with 15,000 in sales, we'll be happy. That would be like the easiest target for me to hit in the world. Yeah. You know, just because I'm like, that's a low, if that was my own brand, I'd be pumped. Because I'd be building speed, but you're shooting for that. You hit 400,000. Mm-hmm. 2006. I wasn't in the e-commerce game yet. Like I was very familiar with websites and computers and all of that, but I wasn't doing Amazon or e-commerce. I can imagine that being good at it, like you know, and having a value add or an opportunity like that would have been huge. Like that tax thing. And one, kudos to you for being way ahead of the game. In regards to like understanding those types of strategies. Like I remember in 2000, well, I've been doing this 10 years. So like, let's say 2012 and we were working, like my first company was Trailer Hitches. And oh, wow. So we had to be really, clever mm-hmm. with how we shipped, Trailer Hitches. And it was actually in our negotiations with FedEx and UPS that we got these amazing rates on anything oversized, which allowed us to be, even though we were later to the game, mm-hmm. cheaper than every other distributor or reseller because of the money we were saving in shipping. So now tax laws, all these things change with Nexus. But you know, with e-commerce being the Wild West, if you're clever enough, not to find loopholes, but to find, I would call them selling strategies, mm-hmm. You can have an enormous success. Okay, so you have spa business going on. You have mm-hmm. consulting agency going on. Now you have an e-commerce brand that's taking off almost as a half a million in its first year without trying. What's next from there?
So everything was growing. So Jersey was growing. The spa business was growing. It's interesting when you get success like that. All of a sudden people want to know how you do it. Mm. Right. And so then we were starting to get people contacting me saying, I need help with this. I need help with that. And the first person that said to me, I need help with my e-commerce business. I was like, I wonder if my ideas, my ideology here would translate to another business. And so, I was like, okay, well, we can do some coaching with you. And I didn't charge them to do it. I was just like, I just wonder if it would work, you know? And so we started that out. And then the next client that came, well, the next person that came along asked me the same question. I'm like, well, sure, but I'm going to charge you this. And the next person that came along, I doubled it. And I just kept doubling that fee until someone went, man, that's quite expensive. And that's how I found my pricing for the coach. So that subsequently, that whole coaching thing then has taken me all over the world. So not only do I get to run my own e-com businesses, but I get to travel the world helping other people with their e-com businesses, which is just
awesome.
It's just magical. Honestly, I've seen so much of the world, and you get to understand the beauty of the planet and see different cultures and different ideas, and does what you think work actually work in another country, and what makes it, oh, it's just, I love it, the whole
I'm doing it now, and I'm someone that would have probably been considered ADHD, or like, you know, especially when you understand all of my upbringing, and like, mm-hmm. you know, e-commerce has been the only thing that's captivated me, mm-hmm. Where I haven't been bored since I found it. Yeah. You know, and there's just always something to learn. Now I'm doing international expansion and supply chain and trying to get more efficient, and you know, actually just got involved with a project with these Nigerian women that I'm going to like build a business that's giving back to them. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's just like, that's, you know, I lived in Cameroon, it's country over. And you know, so it's like, what are you going to get involved with? Don't know. Yeah, yeah. It's like, you know, I haven't gone there yet to meet them. That's my next question is, okay, so right now in the world of Zoom, okay, this is in 2006 or 2008. Mm-hmm. You know, I have clients all over the world in Europe. We're talking you're in England right now. Mm-hmm. How do I get it where they're starting to say, hey, I need you to see you in person, come out. Like, how does that work? How do I get them to bring me to Berlin?
That's a really interesting question. I can only tell you what I did. And that was to get really good at what I was doing.
Okay.
And I think
did you just say, I need to be there in person? You just like make the ask?
I think if it was happening now, I think it might be different, because back then Zoom wasn't really a thing. And, the companies that I end up working with and coaching with, I just say to them, listen, I can talk to you over the phone, but let me tell you what will happen if I come over and spend a week with you guys in person, and I want to go around your warehouse. I want to pick and pack with the workers. I want to sit in your marketing department. I want to hear the guys on the customer service phone. I want to be able to take notes on everything and ask anybody in the company any question and get an answer. I need that sort of freedom to go around the business. There are very few people that will give it to you, but when you get it, man alive, can you do some really great stuff, because you're a total outsider, and you see things. I remember, again, he's become a really good friend of mine, actually, one of my first clients in New Zealand. Went over, spent 7 days with those guys, just deep diving in their business, and their marketing director who was walking around their business with me, she said to me at the end of day one, we'd only been there day one, she said, I've learned more about this company in the last few hours with you than I have the whole 5 years I've been working here. And you kind of go, wow, wow. In fact, I walked into the CEO's office day two. I'll never forget it. I walked into the CEO's office and I said to him, listen, I reckon I can tell you a way where you'll save $1 million a year. But before I tell you what you can do to save that $1 million a year, will you give me 20% of the saving?
What did he say?
He said, bugger off.
Bugger off.
Yeah. He said, there's no way, but you can tell me what we need to do. So I was having a laugh and a joke with him. It was great.
No, I love it. I've had one instance like that maybe verbalized, and I can remember just how that made me feel. Mm. It wasn't a paid client. It was actually at a local university here. I'm a mentor there. Mm. And I would speak in some of, like, I was trying to become a speaker. I guess I am a speaker now, but at the time I was becoming a speaker and was getting practice at the class level. So, you know, entrepreneurship 201 or whatever, or design thinking. And I had a student through his dad reached out to me as a business. And he said, my son said that your class or your, like, your lesson, your speaking, whatever he said was the most impactful thing he's ever heard in his 4-year career at college or something, you know? And I was just like, wow,
that's amazing.
Speaking plain. I wasn't even doing anything genius, you know? Mm-hmm. I was just like having a conversation with these kids, you know, not from a business perspective, but just knowing, like, if you tell people what you're really thinking and not afraid to ask questions and, like, you know, get into it, it's amazing, like, what that insight can do for people just to shoot straight. And I think in the business world, people are so scared of being wrong with the advice they're giving that they're, you know, they don't do anything at all. Like, I worked in that corporate environment and there's no incentive to stick your neck out. So for the lady that's there as the VP of marketing or whatever, you know, there's these frustrations or whatever of a company that size. But usually it's like, okay, if she suggests something crazy, it doesn't work. Like, that's on her. Otherwise, she can just, like, keep maintaining. So I think it'd be awesome to come in as a business consultant. And I'm asking because I think there's a part of me that sees my future in 10 years or wherever the case might be, where I'm either, like, you know, some kind of investor where I'm buying businesses and doing the same thing for them, or coming in with a small team probably and doing the same thing you're doing. So just, you know, when you think about where do you go from here, sometimes I think continuing to business solve continue to solve problems in business for companies around the world would be like a dream.
It's amazing. And the thing that I've noticed, Andrew, is that actually when you go into somebody else's company, when you do this kind of stuff, I say this to clients all the time. I'm going to come in. We're going to talk about stuff that is not rocket science. You could figure out everything that I'm going to tell you, right? I haven't got a secret bullet. I haven't got a secret sauce. The principles that we're going to talk about, you could read in 24 different business books, right? The reality of it is I'm going to see it, whereas you currently don't, right? And that's the reality of it. That's the truth of it. Now, I know, for example, there are things in my business, because I have become so tunnel visioned in what we're doing, that I'm not going to see it. And this is why I think, you know, go do the coaching, go do the consulting, because as you do it for somebody else, it makes you see your business in a different light. And you go, man, I'm doing the same thing. I need to, do you know what I mean? I need
apply
to change
to
this
mind.
Behavior.
Apply
yeah. I mean, I still don't know to this day, whenever I do coaching or whenever I do consulting, I don't know to this day who gets more out of it, the client or me.
Well, they always say teaching is the best form of learning.
It's just, yeah.
It's, you know, so it's like, I can agree to that. And, you know, it is. I always say it's not rocket science. I've just spent 10 years obsessing about the common science, you know, on this platform. You know, it's just like, it's a methodology of just paying attention to the right things. And I think that just like in relationships, you know, like, this is why it's so important to have, like, the people around you be of quality. You know, you are the sum of the five people around you, because what people can't see in themselves, you see in them. So if the five people around you are inspiring and motivated and disciplined and, like, of good character and all those kinds of things, you see it in them and you're like, oh, I can do this for me. Yeah. Or, you know what I'm saying? Like, it becomes a reflection. Yeah. Or even their not so good qualities, those are a mirror too. And you're like, okay, this is an amazing person that I highly respect, that's of good character, whatever. Mm. And I see this flaw. That's something that, like, you know, because you even have good people around you, you see good people with flaws and you're like, okay, that's something that I want to address in my life. Yeah. You know? So I think that's the same thing in business. At least for me, is, you know, if you bring somebody in, let's say reputation, you're bringing a good person into your company, a good consultant, let's say it's even reputation, you know, they're coming in, and they're able to look, like, at your business and just see the things that you can't, just kind of like a fitness trainer or anything else. And I didn't understand that until I charged myself. and I valued myself and the advice I was going to give to others, mm-hmm. it allowed it, you know, a lot more open mindset in my own mind to accept feedback from others and yeah. that consulting and be like, oh my gosh, like, so like last year, or the year before I had a speaking coach, you know, went through 12 lessons or so with him and God, mm-hmm. he ripped me apart. But like, and I did a sales copywriting course, you know, those mm-hmm. are two like practical examples for anyone listening of things that I was like, you know, there's a lot of good things I'm good at. Sales yeah. copy is not it. Like, you know, I can write good content, but sales copy is not. And speaking, I wanted to be able to like get more direct with my points and just like get it out, you know, which can be hard for me. Okay, so like we have like 10 minutes. I want to get to, and I digress for going down a rabbit hole there, but back to talking about consulting, and I was asking, how do you get them to fly you out? Like, because I think mm-hmm. that's super cool. Like nowadays I get samples and we get on a Zoom call and talk about mm-hmm. it. But it'd be so much, you know, from logistics, the Amazon ecosystem is like, you know, you got supply chain, you got pricing, competitor analysis, profit. You have so many different aspects to in any e-commerce business, but specifically the Amazon one. Today's title is like, you know, selling an e-commerce business. At what point, so you have the Jersey business, you're consulting for others. Mm-hmm. Where does your first exit come into play?
Jersey wasn't my first exit. I sold various businesses over the
okay.
years.
Okay.
But this was really the first, I mean, Jersey is what I was known for. So okay. the other businesses I sold, nobody, apart from the people that bought them, they weren't big out their business, but because I've been doing the e-commerce podcast, because now I was starting to get, you know, a little bit of exposure around the world and what I was doing, my name became synonymous with Jersey and Jersey became synonymous with me, Matt the Jersey guy. And that, so Jersey is sort of the sale of almost part of my identity in some respects. Do you know what I mean? It's that kind of, but it was time to move on. We'd been doing Jersey for 15 years. And I think we'd given it, you know, a good innings. The world of beauty was changing. And I still get on really well with my business partner from Jersey, him and his wife, beautiful people, beautiful family. But it was, I think those kind of relationships, they have a natural end, and recognizing that end point and going, actually, it's probably good now if we do exit. Is really helpful. And
yeah.
So we were approached at the start of 20, what year are we now? 22. So it's 21. So the start of last year, we were approached by one of our competitors. And they said, we'd love to buy Jersey. And I said, well, awesome. Cause we're thinking of selling it. So let's have a conversation. And so we did, and we reached a deal, and it took about 7 months for the whole thing to go through, which is both fast and slow at the same time. And so, yeah, it was the right time, and it was a good thing to do. And it's freed me to do some whole other things now, which is great. But part of me still misses it.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's something that, I've had to contemplate, you know, the last couple of years, I think, since all the aggregators and there's offers going everywhere for e-commerce businesses or agencies, and who would I be even during the pandemic without offers on the table, you know, is what if our client base can't afford to pay us, you know, not saying they'll all go under, but what if they're unable to pay, or they close their doors or stay on pause for 12 months, or all these scenarios went in my head. And I really had to do some, you know, internal searching just to make sure. I wanted to be sure that I wouldn't lose my identity if for some reason I went, you know, I'm still going to be in business, I'm still going to figure things out, but if Marknology goes away, like, who am I, you know? I wouldn't say I'm synonymous with Amazon, but you know, if I'm known for something, it's definitely that. And so, you know, if that's taken away from me, you know, what do I do? And, you know, I think I can find plenty of things to do, but I want to find something that I'm as passionate about. I wouldn't be able to replace it with something not as passionate.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Okay. So 7 months, I don't think that's a super long time, you know, it's not short, but you know, due diligence. And I just know that those things take time. You've already sold other businesses. Do you have other e-commerce businesses you're working with now that you're trying to do the same thing? Or can we kind of speak to that vaguely? Like, how's the e-commerce business compared to like some of the other exits?
So it's a funny thing when you exit an e-commerce, well, any business, I think, when you exit a business, you have an idea, especially if you've not done it before, you have this dream, don't you? Every entrepreneur's dream is, I want to build a business. I want to exit at the right time. And so in your head, I'm going to build it and I'm going to sell it. I'm going to get a chunk of money, which I'm going to be grateful for. I'm then going to sort of walk away into the sunset and, you know, go live in the Bahamas or wherever, you know, wherever your dream is. And the reality is very, very different, very different. And so it's, you know, if like you, you're involved in the business in a way which is more than name only, you know, your heart, your soul, your passion is going into this thing. You know, selling your business is like selling your kidney. It's a bit more of a decision. You know, you're not putting an old toaster on eBay and getting $20 for it. This is quite a big deal. And so you've got to know that the time's right. I mean, you've really got to know the time's right, because the cost of selling the business is quite high. So there's the emotional cost, but there's the fact that a stranger is going to come poking around your business and ask you questions which you're not going to like. And you almost feel like you're defensive every day trying to justify things that you've done or not done.
Why do I have to justify to you something that I built? Like, do you want it or not? Kind of thing. Yeah.
And of course you can understand it from the buyer's point of view. They want to know what they're buying. You know, it's a chunk of change that they're parting with. So they want to know there's longevity in it for them and that they can make this thing work. So it's quite right that they do this due diligence, but due diligence is not a pleasant process.
No, it's not.
You know, you go to the doctors, you get a medical. The outcome is good, you know, in terms of you want to get the results. The process, yeah, you know, when he tells you to bend over, it's not going to be pleasant, but it's something you just need to do for a little while. And so it's a lot like that selling your business. There's a lot of contracts to read. There's a lot of admin work. There's a lot of paperwork to go through. And I remember the first e-commerce business I sold back in 2002. Honestly, it was the easiest thing in the world. That I was buying a product from somebody I knew in the industry, and we were selling it. And the guy that I was buying the product from just said to me, "Well, Matt, can I buy the website from you? It's successful. It's got my products on there, and so it just means I can start the ball rolling from." And I said, "Sure. What? How much are you willing to spend?" And we reached a price. I sent him an invoice, and he paid me the invoice, and I gave him everything, and it was just easy.
Just handed it over.
Yeah.
Was it an LLC?
No. It was like 6 months old. It's just a website. Okay. It's just like, okay, Here you go, have at it sort of thing. It was, I think the amount we sold it for was like 50 grand. It wasn't a lot of money, but it was.
Maybe you're like, I didn't put 50 grand worth of work into it. And now you got 50 grand.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was easy. To be fair, I don't think it was 50. I genuinely can't remember how much it was. But
you're
selling
like
Jersey was a lot more involved. It was not like that at all. Not like,
well, you're
that.
Also selling to a competitor, which I was thinking, having them poke around would be extra, you know, extra annoying.
Because what if they don't buy it, right? Mm. They've got access to, you know, your methodology. They want to know what you're doing, your accounts. There's a lot of trust that has to go on in the background as well. Lawyers have to get involved. And I mean, my lawyer is a very good friend of mine. Another guy with ginger hair. Love him to bits, right?
Mm-hmm.
Great, great guy. Very capable lawyer.
I need to move to England. I need to move back. I think, you know, I'm 99.9% English, or at least European by 23 in me. And I'm like, oh man, my people are there. I think, you know, there's just, I've already heard about three or four gingers. I'm sure I can make friends.
I'm sure you could. My daughter's a ginger as well.
I'm like, okay, yeah. Anyone that can be bullied and have a sense of humor, I'm like, all right, I like those people. So
that's just how we do it in England. We just laugh. That's the best.
Okay,
way.
So your lawyer's a redhead, super trust them, and still
yeah, but
wanted
it's still,
to kill
him? It's still a pain in the ass, right? And yeah. But that's lawyers. That's what they do. That's what they're supposed to do. And that's when you've got a good one. When you've got a bad one, man alive, they can just suck the life out of the universe and
they're literally the opposite of me. Like, they think about risk and, like, you know, or like all of those no's. And I'm like, I'm the complete opposite of you. There's a reason we don't get along well.
Yeah, exactly. It is. But you've got to be comfortable with that. You know,
yeah.
They're there to do a job. They, to be fair, they get a bad rap, lawyers. I think, you know, they're there to keep me out of jail and get me the money at the end of the day. And Martin, my friend, my lawyer, did a great job. Phenomenal guy. But it's still, you've still got to be mentally prepared for that. You know, you've still got to go, right, this is like today I'm working with another company. They're an e-commerce agency. They're an e-commerce business. We in effect run their entire operation for them.
Yep.
They've outsourced their whole of their e-commerce to us with an intent to sell. So they want to sell their business in 3 to 5 years time. And so having gone through the whole thing with Jersey now, I'm already talking to Martin about the contracts that need to be in place so that when it comes to due diligence, the whole process is so much easier. But it still meant that today I spent 4 hours going through draft number three of quite a reasonably important contract. But do the work now. It's a lot easier for the, you know, when we come to sell it in a few years.
That's very timing. I'm struggling with words today. That's very like
timely
advice, even in my own life. You know, we're working with four brands right now that are planning to exit that I've been told, you know, they literally have hired us to exit, you know, in 18 to 24 months is kind of the timeline. There's retainers, there's profit sharing, there's like, brokerage fees for making the intros, or basically we just agreed to, if we hit these certain success goals as we're building the brand to exit, like if we hit this, we get this, if we hit this, we hit this. And as an Amazon agency, I've never negotiated in a contract from the beginning of working with them, a percentage upon exit. So that's like, you know, it's new stuff for me. I've been a part of 9 exits. So 9 of the brands I've worked with in the past have exited. I wasn't the one pulling the strings or in the back end of the back office for them. But I was the one that built the brand or built the website or built the Amazon, right? And there's some were running the full ship, you know, like from 3PL to social media to content creation to web to Amazon, even here at Marknology when we specialize in Amazon. So something very relevant to what I'm doing, you know, and it's like, it comes down to, at least maybe you can like correct me if I'm wrong, but really comes down to your contracts, you know, the longevity comes into like, okay, well, do we have these vendors locked in for a couple of years? Do we have these partners locked in for a couple of these clients? You know, what's your churn rate? Mm-hmm. You know, it comes to profitability, mm-hmm. You know, and what those percentages look like. And then the team and like, you know, how sustainable, at least as an agency or as an e-commerce team. Okay, so who's going to run this after you're gone or if it's not an aggregator buying it? So, you know, some of those things that I think can be translated across whatever business that is. But you're right. Like if you're planning for that, what are the ways you can get set up for success without having to do 4 or 5 before you learn? Or, you know, before you finally learn, like I'm not trying to learn on Marknology. I'll be honest with you. Like, that's not the one I want to take that crash course on. you know, but I know that it's near, it's in the future. Mm. So these are things like very top of mind for me, very top of mind for the industry. A lot of Amazon sellers, you know, this is their baby. They've built it. It's created freedom in their life, maybe got them out of their 9 to 5. And, you know, now they're being, you know, offered 8, 10, 16x multiples, which is just an absolute crazy time. And you know what? What's crazy is I know quite a few people that have exited. And, you know, when I'm talking to them, energy wise, I wouldn't say necessarily what they say, but energy wise and a bit of what they say, they almost always say it's not like what they expected. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they say it was a tough, grueling process. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of them like hate the earn out part of it. I think because they go from running their own ship to having someone kind of, you know, boss them around or like change so many things, mm-hmm. and being a part of that as it changes can be hard. And I just make note of that, you know, like when you, it's almost like, if you've been around someone and you never hear them brag about their job or talk about their job that they love, you know, you're like, well, I know that they don't love their job because if they did, we'd be hearing about it. So I think that's interesting insight. And I would love for you just like, because I believe that like, you know, the level of happiness that you have with anything, a person, an activity, exiting a business, doing what you love, comes down to expectations, right? Like that's mainly it. Like if you go to see a movie and you expect a B movie and it's a B movie, you're happy. If you go expecting an A and it's a B movie, you're like, it's kind of like subpar acting, you know, and you're not happy. So
The Eternals.
there we go like if your expectation, like if I go there just like I'm gonna go watch a B movie action, I know it's just action, the acting's gonna be kind of shitty, I'm like, yeah, I got what I wanted out of it. I saw some awesome stuff blow up, you know? And I think that with so many people, like, you have this goal of an exit in mind, maybe for years, maybe for a lifetime. And then, like you said, you get there and it's like not what you expected and you're left kind of just like empty. I would love to just wrap out the show, like, you know, with you, your thoughts on just mindset wise, besides just like the admin and lots of work and someone pushing in your business, like, what can founders prepare themselves for? A book to read, a podcast to follow, like just your advice on what they can be doing besides hiring a consultant like you. I'll leave that there. What could they be doing to get themselves, you know, better positioned mind-wise, mindset-wise, expectation-wise for those things?
Yeah, when it comes to exit, there's a number of things that you have to think about besides your own soul, obviously. You've got to think about your end customer. So, you know, the people buying Jersey, in effect, were buying that customer. And so I have to be able to, I have to make sure that that transition from me to them, ultimately the customer couldn't lose out, right? So I had to think about that ahead of time and we had to plan for the customer.
So that could be contracts.
It could be contracts. It could just be making sure that the people buy it really understand your customer. Do you know what I mean? And what the secret sources are and what makes them tick and why you do certain things and the results of that. So, you know, there are certain things that we did and I went to great lengths to explain why we did them and the learning process that we had with Jersey and why our customers loved it, because they're going to want to see that carry on, right? The second person you have to think about, so you've got your customers to think about, you have to think about your staff, your team, because you cannot, if you've got a team, you cannot sell a business if they're demotivated, if they're anxious, if they're, whoever's coming in to buy it, are they getting the team? Are they losing the whole team? What's going to happen to the team? And for me, when we sold Jersey, this was probably the biggest question in my mind I had to resolve, because there was, 15 staff, something like that at Jersey. And I was like, I don't want 15 people to lose their jobs and I just sit at home, you know, with a glass of cognac thinking, man, I've done well. Do you know what I mean?
And you've worked with those 15 people 15 years, maybe not all of them, but
they're all friends. And you have to think about the scenario for them. I don't necessarily have to take responsibility for absolutely everything, but I have to take responsibility for something and I have to think about them and I have to get them excited. I have to get them on board with what's going on, because, you know, if they're not on board, you're going to find selling your business unbelievably hard and complicated. It's hard enough as it is, you know, get your team with you because otherwise, you know, you'll find yourself alone one day trying to do the work of 9 people and preparing your company for selling it, and you're going to struggle. And it's not a great way to. So my advice is this: whenever you're coming to exit, whenever you're going to end something, end it well. So your relationship with your customers, end that well. Your relationship with your staff, end it well. Your relationship with your suppliers. This was a lesson I learned when I exited the health spa business. I don't think I ended the relationship with my suppliers particularly well at this point. It's been difficult to repair some of those good friendships as a result of my stupidity at that point in time. That was a really big lesson learned. So the suppliers who work with you, you know, some of our suppliers from the beauty brand, part of me didn't have a great relationship with them in the first place, but some of the brands I had a very good relationship with. And so how can I still stay friends with those guys? You know, how can I still go and down to London and have a beer with them or whatever it is that I'm doing? Maintaining those relationships and ending those business relationships well, I think is crucial. Don't burn the bridges.
I love that. And I would echo that. Like, another way of looking at it is just like looking for the win-win. In all of those areas, like, what's a win for me and a win for my employees? What's a win for me and a win for my customers? Are they getting a better team, a more supported team? You know, what are the things I can sell them on? Exactly. Yeah, I think that's amazing. The last question I have, okay, because I could keep going forever, because I've got people don't understand who I've got on as a guest today, like, full of information. I think the last thing I would say is, okay, so if you had to put them in an order of priority, okay, Is it the customers first? Is it your team?
I think that would depend on what you're going on to do. And so with what I was going on to do, a lot of the team were not, you know, the team weren't going with the guy that bought Jersey. He was a competitor. He was
going to put his team in place.
Yeah, he had his team, and which is fair enough for him. You know, he's got his methodology. He's going to plug that in. So I had 15 people to then think about going forward. And so for me, it was key to get that team motivated, to get them where I couldn't give them the exact answers about the future because I genuinely didn't know, but I could be 100% honest about where I was at, but also mix that honesty with hope. Do you know what I mean? Because just facts on its own can be a little bit painful sometimes.
Yeah.
And you know what, Andrew, at the end of the process, I sit back and I look at the sale of Jersey, and I would say it ended well, not because, you know, of the sale, because I drive around in the black Ferrari that my client sold back for 40 grand less. It's not, I don't actually drive around in a Ferrari, by the way. But do you know what I mean? It's not because of what you would normally associate with success. It's because for me, I ended it well because all of those guys still have work and I'm still in relationship, and actually quite a few of them still work for me. Some of them decided to move on, which was fine. They wanted to do something new. And the stuff that I'm now doing with that team, we are rocking and rolling, man. I mean, just everyone's got this fresh vibe. We've moved warehouse. It's a brand new start. There's an energy we've not had for a few years, and it is just kicking off big time. And so I'm super stoked with that. And so I think to answer your question, what's most important, it depends what you're going to do afterwards. It really does depend. And I think for me, it was the team. It really
I love
the
that. In dream world, I would continue to build or improve or consult for businesses with my core team. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like I've built a world class team here. You know, so I'm just thinking through my own lens of, you know, what that could look like.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's important. Know what's next. And it makes me think of the Four Agreements, the book, The Four Agreements, where it says do everything with excellence. You know, it's one of the things, do everything. Even closing out your relationships, even ending things, like end with excellence. And I can attest, in some, I've written emails like 12 different times where I felt like I needed the reason, you know, to explain to a client why I was letting them go, and let me give them all the reasons why and justify it and help them for the next relationship that they're going to have, and the things that went wrong or the reason why. And, you know, it's only happened a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And I can say that in those times, I feel much better at peace with the short email I wrote that was kind and that was just, you know, suggesting it's time to part ways and, you know, how can I serve you in this onto the next chapter. Mm-hmm. There's a huge part of me that wanted to write the 12 emails before, right? They're just like, let me tell you why I'm right, you know. But at the end of the day, I think ending something with kindness and being cordial and really is the way that, you know, I feel better about at night and, you know, onto the next chapter. When I hear them, I don't think of resentment or bitterness or like anger because we ended well.
Yeah. So. And that's so important. I mean, I can look back over my life and I have a handful of relationships that have not ended well. And I regret every single one of them.
Yeah.
And it's easy to sit and go, it's their fault and this, that, and the other thing. You just can't be, if I'm honest with myself, that's just not right. And part of me wishes I could go back and change some of those things. And some of it's down to them. Some of it's down to me and my pigheadedness or whatever it is. You know, in hindsight, it's a wonderful thing. But then there's things that I look back and go, that ended really well. I wish I could do everything like that. Do you know what I mean? And so that's always my advice to people now. End it well. Just end well. Don't leave anything on a bad note. You know, just wherever possible, end it well.
Startup Puzzle. I think that's an awesome note to end it on. Matt Edmondson, thank you so much for being on the show. And Gusto, thanks again for being our sponsor for today's episode. Manage your HR needs with Gusto is the way to go. Make it easier to onboard talents, handle payroll, and support your people in any way. Gusto's platform is powered by advanced technologies, so talent management and payroll processing will never be the same again. Try Gusto for free. Sign up at gusto.com/startuphustle and enjoy a 3-month free subscription. Matt, I know this won't be the last time. Loved being on your show. I could have picked your brain all day today. I think we have a few more businesses to get into the weeds of. Maybe we'll have a part 2 and 3. But I know it's getting probably later there. Thanks again, listeners, for listening. We'll talk to you next time.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.